This is the Rental Income Podcast, where we talk to owners of rental properties and give you actionable tips and advice that will help you make more money while dealing with less hassle. And now your host, Dan Lane.
I put together a list of 7 things I wish I knew earlier about renting properties, and you can download your free copy. Just go to my website, freelandlordgift.com. Okay, on the show today, we have someone that has kind of a different perspective than a lot of the people that we've talked to on the show. Lisa Cummings is joining us today, and Lisa does not like to use loans to buy her house. She'd prefer to use cash, and if she can't use cash, she likes to have a big down payment. So a lot of people that we've talked to really have used a lot of leverage to buy their properties, and Lisa just does not think that's the best way to go about it. So I want to talk to Lisa about this and find out how this is working out for her. So Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dan. Really happy to be here and bring maybe a contrarian perspective.
Yeah. I'm excited to hear this. Well, before we get into the meat of today, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started?
You know, I got into real estate investing, actually worked at Janus Mutual Funds, worked at a mutual fund company pretty early in my career in the 90s. And as I learned more and more and became an expert on what was going on in the stock market, I became really disenfranchised with it and wanted to stay away from it as an investment vehicle. So I have very little money in the stock market and started to look into real estate and think, wow, what a great idea. You're hedging against inflation if you have rental income. So that's what piqued my interest. I was looking for something other than the stock market. Yeah, started reading all the books and all those things and did what many investors do, where you learn for like 5 years before you actually take action and put your plan into place. And now it's, now it's underway.
You already had a primary house when you got started, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Had a primary house. And just like you got started, we considered renting out our house, and we were going to get started just like you did and like many other people do by renting out the house that we had owned. But right. In this case, it was in an area where there were a lot of soil issues and houses around us were having giant slab problems. And we were afraid we couldn't withstand a big chunk like that if we had to come up with 10 or 30 grand or whatever it was at the time, we wouldn't have been prepared for that. So we went ahead and sold that house, even though we wanted to rent it out. And now in retrospect, it would have been a really great investment property.
Yeah. So you sold that house and then you bought another house to live in?
Bought another house to live in. Yeah. And then, you know, the first property we bought was commercial. We actually thought we have 5 now and 3 of them are commercial. They are warehouse office combination, pretty small, and like 1,200 square feet total kind of places with the warehouse and the office space.
That's interesting because I always think of commercial properties as being harder to rent out. You know, I see those properties sitting there for a long time, where a residential property usually will rent pretty quickly. Do you have a lot of vacancy with a commercial property?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, it's funny because yes, you have the wisdom I did not have. I still think, you know, it's probably nice in the overall scheme of things. When we hit our goal of 12 to 15 total properties that are paid off and feeding us, that's the end goal. Only 3 of them will be commercial. So that can tell you something. I already have the 3 and we're not going to get more. We don't love commercial. We were looking at the opposite point of view thinking, oh, well, it's triple net. So it's not just covering if you have a loan on the property, it's not just covering that for your cash flow. They're paying insurance and they're paying the property taxes, which are huge in Texas.
Sure.
And you don't have to maintain it. So no toilet calls. And it seemed like a really cool deal. And 3 to 5 year leases.
Right.
That sounded sometimes 10 years. Sounds great until you have a 3-year lease and the guy goes out of business a year and a half into and there's nothing to go get. I mean, there's no.
Yeah, they're bankrupt. I mean, what are you going to go after?
Right.
So that happened to you? So your tenant went bankrupt?
Yeah.
Wow. Did you have to evict them or did they just leave?
No. In fact, you know, even though the story stinks because the guy went out of business and there was nothing to go get and there was a long vacancy. Here's the bright side of the story, which I think for all those people scared of a toilet call, this is a bigger scare to me. You know, what happened to us where the guy's just gone. And then what about the eviction process? And what if they just leave a bunch of their stuff in there? What if sold a bunch of fixtures and, you know, they do finish out in commercial buildings. So what if there's a lot of expense for you to get it back to a rentable state? This guy, to give you a kind of heartwarming story, silver lining, this guy had so much integrity that we just sat down and had a conversation and he said, I'm going to go get a job. And so give me a month or two to go get a job and I'll pay you $1,000 a month until we can come to whatever agreed upon amount. So we let him out of his lease and didn't make it like the total amount he would have owed us, but at least to catch up on the rent, he was behind a few months. And so it was like a $10,000 deal and the guy paid after month after he got a job. And, you know, he could have looked at this realistically and said, they're not going to get anything out of me. It's going to be so much money. It's not worth them going after me. And that was the truth. And so this guy just had enough integrity that he sat down with us to cut a deal. And after he got a job, he paid us for
That's awesome. That really you got lucky on that. I mean, that really could have gone bad. So then you have two residential properties. So tell me about those.
Love those. And so in the Austin, Texas area where I live, you can get a very respectable family home in suburbia for, well, now, if you bought them today, they would probably be $150,000. But we bought them at 105 and one at 130. And these are 322, you know, very bread and butter, typical, nice floor plan, nicely finished out, hardwood floors, that sort of stuff. So it's really nice. That's what you can get for your money.
And they're in like nice neighborhoods.
Yeah.
That's great.
It's not my neighborhood. It wouldn't be the place I would live. We actually live on 30 acres in the boondocks outside of Austin. So we live a little different lifestyle. So suburbia is not our place, but they're they're safe neighborhoods. They're good neighborhoods. They're starter family home kind of places. And
those tenants have been good. You haven't had any problems with your tenants?
No problems at all. On the one that we bought first, we've had the same tenant in there, have had zero turnover. And so that's really great. She actually plans to live her life out there. So
that's perfect.
Yeah. And I think this is a lesson that I would share. It's really cool is that this woman has three large dogs, like the typical, ooh, I don't even allow dogs at all, or no way, large dogs are scary. And we are big dog people, dog rescue people, have a spot in our hearts for that and think that people who rent single family homes, you know, it's part of a family thing.
Right, sure. Yeah.
So we allow dogs, and that's something we do that's different from a lot of others. And that allowed us to get a tenant like this. She's phenomenal. She pays rent on time every single time and just renews and renews and renews and has three big dogs, and it's worked out great.
Are you raising the rent every time she renews, or are you just holding it flat?
In this one, we're holding it flat. At some point, we might decide, oh, the market rate has gone, you know, so much higher that it would make sense to do that. But in this case, we've just left it as it is, and it seems fair enough. We actually have a loan on this property, and it's one of those deals like after I already have leverage and have gone through the hellacious loan process, that is one reason I don't getting loans on houses, because it's such a pain dealing with banks. That we're just going to let that one ride out probably. But yeah, I think we'll keep the rent the same probably for another couple years, because it's a fair deal and it's working out really great.
Yeah, I guess that's always the debate is do you raise the rent and risk losing the tenant? Or if you have a good tenant, just keep the rent the way it is and you don't have any problems. Like that's always kind of a tough decision to make.
It's like art science, because think about the turnover. If you have 1 month vacancy, in this case, her rent is $1,250 a month. So if I have 1 month vacancy, that costs me $1,250. And then the make ready fees and then the realtor fees and whatever else might come along with that, you're looking at $2,000-$3,000 possibly for a turning over a property. And then you start amortizing that over what an increase would be and say, man, this is working out great.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's not worth it to get the extra 20 or 25 bucks or whatever you might get raising the rent. So, all right. So let's talk about the loans. So you don't like to have loans on the properties. And that goes against what a lot of people will tell you, that the powerful thing with real estate is having loans and having that leverage. Why do you not like having loans?
I will say I agree with what they're saying. It is more powerful. You can get more accomplished by using more leverage. And I know that intellectually. At the same time, my husband and I are both pretty risk averse. We live in our dream house on our dream property. We don't want to risk losing it. Real estate is very cyclical. It's boom, bust, boom, bust. You know, if you go buy 50 properties and they're all leveraged and then you hit a bust, you can lose it all. We actually paid off our personal house as another deal. You know, like we could take
congratulations.
That
that's great. So awesome. That is, I think, the Thank dream was, of every investor. That's awesome.
Yeah. Right now, why? Like, I look at this and say, the market's crazy. It's hot. I mean, in Austin, I can make an offer. I get 3 minutes to make an offer before there are 12 of them submitted at the same time. And people are bidding each other up. So why buy high and go through the process of working with a bank that's a pain in the neck? Instead, right now, because of the market conditions, we are just paying them off. And so we don't have all of them paid off yet, but we have a couple of them paid off. And then one of them, one of the residential properties, is actually in a self-directed IRA. So there's another kind of angle to funding cash through self-directed IRA.
You know, I want to talk to you about that in a second, because we haven't brought that up on the show. But I want to just ask you a few more questions here about owning the houses outright. So that's your goal, is you want to have 12 to 15 houses that are totally paid off. And then is that like your retirement plan, like to be able to live off the rental income?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Paid off will be a pretty baller life.
Totally. Yep. So are you looking to buy more houses right now?
Not right now. So okay. We're just in the place, because we're also a little risk averse in the location. I know some people get brave and they're buying houses wherever the best deals are. We like them within a 45-minute drive. So in this area, it's just too hot right now. I don't want to buy high. So we're spending the current time paying it off. When there's a bust, heck yeah, then we'll be diving in there.
Ready to go. Yeah.
Yeah. We would consider, maybe we have 5 left to buy at that point, and maybe we would leverage them. But the other beauty is, as we pay things off, the snowball effect and the compounding effect of money that adds up is huge.
Yeah.
So then we're getting to the point now where you can buy a house a year off of the rents that are coming in, or the lack of mortgage to pay on our personal house. So that's where it just starts to add on itself and really get going. It takes a while to get up to speed like that, but it's just bits at a time. And over 10 years, now it's really rolling.
You know, I think you're really smart. You know, I think a lot of our listeners are probably going to be mad at me for saying this, but I think you're going about this the right way. That I think that there's a lot less risk when you don't have these big loans and you're not leveraged out, or, you know, something bad happens and the market collapses and all of a sudden you can't rent these places for what you're renting them for. And you go from being cash flow positive to losing money every month. I think you're in a real good situation. We had Jim Adams on the show on episode 9. And if anyone hasn't heard this show, you should go back and look it up. Jim did the exact opposite of what you're doing. And he had a lot of leverage, and he bought 100 houses. The market went bad and he lost everything. I mean, he lost his personal house. He had to sell his wedding ring to feed his family one night.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, it's like bad things can happen. And, you know, we've been in a period where for the last couple of years, prices are going up. But, you know, we've seen that prices can go down and the market can get rough. So I think that's really good. So you're just kind of holding tight, seeing if the market does go down at some point, and then you'd be ready to buy some more.
Yeah, that's the plan. Holding tight. It'll take us a couple more years to pay off what we have. So, For those 5 properties that we have, they're not all paid off. So it'll take a little time to do that. And then we'll either be in a buying mode or stash cash until the bust happens.
Perfect.
And wait, but won't buy them just to buy them. And, you know, I think, yeah, I bet a lot of people are listening going, oh my gosh, you could be getting so much more if you leverage. And we know that intellectually, but we happen to not be cool with that risk. And you have to do what you're comfortable with. Some people don't care if they lose it all because they're just bold and they'll start over again and it's not a big deal. And I look at it and go, man, I spent the days being broke and dumpster diving for furniture, and I don't want that life again.
Right.
I'm only looking for my trend line to go up. And in order to have that level of certainty, even though it's not totally certain, I'm taking less risk. And we've chosen to do the you know, less leveraged kind of approach. And I know that's not for everyone. Not everybody, maybe they just say, oh, you know, you're a scaredy cat and you're going to get there more slowly. And that might be the case, but that's okay. You know, like, we've thought about right. this deeply and made a decision based on what works for us.
Yeah, I think that's great. So let's get back to the self-directed IRA. So so was that real complicated to get set up? I've heard that it can be a paperwork nightmare to get that set up. Do you find that to be true, or was it pretty simple?
I thought it was pretty straightforward once I found a company that I felt comfortable with. And the company that I use is SD, like Sam, can't think of a D right now, Delta IRA, SDIRA.com. And or SDIRAservices.com, rather. I did run into, I want to say, like shysters before I found them. And I had a couple of meetings where I just had every intuition in my body telling me these guys were going to steal my money or something was off. And so I think that industry or that type of service is fraught with a fair amount of sketchy characters. At least I experienced that. And so then I finally found this company on a referral, and it just felt like any other stand-up business transaction. It was very process-oriented. They had great service. They've continued to have great service. And the setup was not, you know, it wasn't too bad at all. The purchase process wasn't too bad at all. The main thing to know is that you have to have enough money. It has to be in a traditional IRA. So it can't come from a Roth. So you have to already have the money in a traditional IRA.
Okay.
And then it has to be paid for in cash. I think there's some possibility where you could use leverage, but it gets really convoluted. And as I understand it, the IRS doesn't like that. And it's a big red flag. And it makes
not worth it.
Yeah, that's how I understood it. So you have to have enough of a chunk to buy a property or a piece of land or whatever you were going to go for. And then I thought it was pretty straightforward. I've really liked it. Now, one thing you have to do is you can't be personally involved. It's like this degree of separation. They have a term for it that's lost on me right now. But the IRS wants to make sure you don't have personal gain out of it and like live in the house or something.
Right.
So you have to make sure that you have a property manager, and the way the funds have to go to the property manager or to the IRA company directly. You can't manage it yourself.
Okay.
So that's something to know as well.
So does that property manager, does he manage all your properties, or is it just for that one property?
Yeah, we do use the same person for
all. Okay. Does the property manager then take care of making sure that the money is separate or going back into the IRA, or does the IRA company handle that for you?
You know, what's interesting on this one, because it's a weird deal, this tenant sends the check and writes it out directly to the IRA company. So then there's just a verification process each month to say, yep, that check hit.
Okay. Okay.
That's
wow.
Option. I don't think that's their norm. I think normally the property manager takes a kind of like an operating account out of the other extra money that's in your IRA, and then they can do repairs off of it and that sort of thing. And then the way that I've been doing it is, as something is needed, let's say, you know, something breaks, then the tenant contacts the property manager contacts me and says, hey, you want me to take care of this? I say, yes. I fill out a request form that's like, yes, you can distribute this check to this vendor or this trade, and then they send it over. So there's a little bit of paperwork anytime a money exchange happens, but it's not too bad.
Right. Okay. So then the money, their rent money, is basically going into a savings account, right? So it's available for repairs. Is that how that works?
It's going back into your IRA. It's kind of like it's rental income. It would be akin to your money in the stock market growing or increasing in value.
Okay. So then as that money accumulates, piles up, grows, you could, if you wanted to at some point when you had enough money in there, you could buy a second property.
Yeah.
Okay. That's great. Yeah, I like that. I think I might have to look into doing that someday. All right, well, let's get into the lightning round. Now, this is episode 14, and in 14 episodes, we have never gotten the five questions in 60 seconds. Do you feel like you can do it? You think?
Is this the day? Okay, I've got to do it.
All right.
I'm going to do it.
All right, let's do it.
Let's do it.
The Rental Income Podcast Lightning Round. Five rapid-fire questions and answers in 60 seconds.
All right, the first question is, what's your favorite real estate book?
It's called Hold, How to Find, Buy, and Rent Houses for Wealth.
Okay. Number two, the number one fear that I hear from people all the time on why they don't want to own a rental property is they don't want to get a call at 3 a.m. that a toilet's clogged. As a landlord, have you ever gotten this call?
No, not once.
Perfect. Number three, if you had a property sitting vacant for 6 months, you had a potential renter apply that had horrible credit, a spotty work history, and a spotty rental history, would you take a chance on them and rent to them or let the property sit?
No, I think screening is everything.
Okay. Number four, if you could give one piece of advice to a new landlord, what would it be?
Go talk to local investors and understand all of the expenses so you don't make a dummy move and think you'll have more cash flow than you really will.
Yes or no, would you rent a property to your best friend?
No.
Lisa, we did it.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Woo-hoo! That is, I'm so happy. I am so happy. I thought we would never get that done. But that is good.
Now you know it's doable.
It is.
No, you don't have to change your lightning round timeline.
So your answers. So Lisa, why don't you tell us where we can find you and maybe tell us about your podcast?
Okay, great. So my podcast is called Career Q&A. So you can find it at pinchyourselfcareers.com. And you can ping me at lisa@pinchyourselfcareers.com. And on Twitter, it's @careerpodcast. We talk about all sorts of cool listener questions. Most people are doing real estate investing while they still have a job. So while whatever career questions they come up with, listeners call in and then I answer them online.
It's a really good show. I really encourage everyone to check it out. Well, Lisa, thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate you coming on and talking to you. I think this was a really, really great episode.
Great. Well, I hope I added some value and get some people thinking they can call in and give the you should leverage kind of comments now. Get the debate going, right?
Yeah, I'm sure the hate emails are going to start coming in.
But, that's right. I'll love you back.
Well, if you want to review anything we talked about today, you can find the show notes at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode14. Also, if you haven't gotten your free copy yet of the 7 things I wish I knew earlier about renting properties, you can download your free copy. Just go to freelandlordgift.com. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you with a brand new episode next Tuesday.